Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is World Form Zen Fighting Champion John Chong, and you're listening to the AMAA Legends and Pioneers Radio Blog Show with Professor Gary Lee and the Sport Karate Museum Archives, connecting the history one warrior at a time. Enjoy.
Aloha, everybody, and much mahalo. Tonight we have an incredible, positive show, and I'm so excited about my special guest tonight. But always, before we bring on our special guest and my co-host, I always like to introduce my producer. Now, you know him because he's created something really cool these past few years, the who's who in the martial arts. We've honored Chuck Norris, Benny Kiedis, I mean a whole slew of people, Ernie Reyes Jr., Ron Van Cleef, and it's all because of his vision. He also produces the Parts Unknown in the radio show he's had for going on 8 years with over 13,000 listeners. And I tell you something, I'm so excited about introducing him. His name is Hunchy Jesse Bowen. He's out of Greenville, North Carolina. Well, I'll let him talk a little bit. Hunchy Bowen, are you there, sir?
Hey, sir. How you doing?
Good. How are you? I'm excited about it. You just had an incredible past weekend. We got to honor Ron Van Cleef and Ernie Reyes. And now, coming up in October, we're doing the Sport Karate Museum history book. Tell a little bit of people about what you do and about the book a little bit, sir, please.
Sure, sir. Well, you know, we've been blessed that we've had success. We've been able to grow success, and, you know, I'm really excited that, you know, our publishing company, we've launched that. And, you know, back here, you know, a week ago when we had our event, there was also Take Center Stage, the Author's Journey Expo, which was a part of the Action on Film Festival. And, you know, we had about five people, including the show, to actually win awards. And, you know, we're really excited about that. And this is where we have our commitment, is to helping people to be able to tell their story, that, you know, they can make a change. I can, you can, through our life experience and being able to share those things in that. So that's, you know, that's part of what we're doing. And this is what the book is about, you know, that the sport museum, you know, the history book is about being able to archive and share that real story that people really don't have that opportunity to share, but finding ways that we can use technology and be able to advance what we do, especially in the martial arts, to keep it alive. So, you know, the history book, this is where we're back on. We've had a lot of people to ask that question, am I too late? So we have decided to open the registration back up until the 30th. And so if anyone, if you'd like to be a part of this History General book, talking about sport karate, your life, the impact that sport karate's had on your life, then we definitely want to invite you to become a part of the book. So I think this is very important, because if you would ask the question, how many of us would still be in the martial arts today if it had not been for sport karate? You would probably have at least half the people would say, I wouldn't be in the martial arts. Sport karate was a part of my foundation and motivation to show up for that next class. So, you know, what we're doing is very important to share with the younger generation what we experience, what we know, that can give them some hard facts and information about how they can enjoy sport karate even more than we did.
Well, I want to say thank you publicly and to you personally, because we're going to do the debut of the book at the Power of Women October 1st, and Friday night we've got an incredible weekend planned. And I want to thank you, Hunchy Jesse Bowen, not only for the award at Las Vegas, but to be recognized, be able to do a radio show, and to be able to teach people and educate people about, you know, sport karate. Now, I'm going to hit you with something really hard. You know, the sixth, because I knew you're a great coach. We're going to be talking about coaches tonight, so I hope you don't go to bed. You know, I know you have a chance to go to bed early, but I want to throw your 2 cents in. So as we get to six going about okay. coaching, I want you to say something because you're a great coach. You're a mindset coach. I know that you actually teach for, is it Duke University? Or
well, no, I retired from Duke. I now coach for Duke Corporate Education, which is called yeah. Duke CE. And, you know, they specialize in customized training programs to Nike and Raytheon and, you know, the Fortune 500 companies.
Well, when we get rock and rolling out of the sixth, throw your 2 cents in, please, okay?
Okay, will do.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for being and allowing us to be part of the home of everybody's home on a Tuesday night. And thank you for the past 8 years, and I appreciate you so much. And remember, if you're interested in getting involved with the book, go to www.sportkaratemuseumhistorybook.com. Now, Auntie Bong, what's your phone number in case anybody wants to give you a call?
919-618-8075. They can call or text that number, and I'll respond back to them. And, you know, I really would like to say that, you know, this is a very exciting time, you know, because it's exciting for me because we have that opportunity to really look at the Sport Karate Museum and turn it into a virtual-based museum that, you know, people can have access to it. You know, we have the new magazine that's going to be coming out. We have about 4 magazines we're launching. And the Sport Karate magazine is going to be one of those magazines that we're going to do, but it's all going to be digital, and it's going to be a very interactive magazine. So, you know, I'm really excited about that, about, you know, being able to share and being able to bring technology to a place where, you know, today's martial artists, that they can benefit from it. The old days are gone, you know. So, you know, we're in this whole new place.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you again so much for all you do. And the martial art community thanks you, too. And especially all the history generals. So God bless you, Auntie Jesse Bowen. Ladies and gentlemen, that's been my producer, Auntie Jesse Bowen. And remember, look up the book and find out all about it by going to www.sportkaratemuseumhistorybook.com. Now, going on, you know, I've got 2 co-hosts that are amazing, and I'm going to introduce them right now before we go on. Dean, are you there? Dean Piles.
Yes, right here, sir.
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
Hey, doing great, sir.
Hey, what do you think about Las Vegas and us getting an award for talking? Isn't that cool?
I think that was awesome, you know. I mean, It's been a blessing. You know, Jesse had a great vision when he started this thing, and the show is just really, you know, it gives everybody a window into the martial arts world. Actually, it gives them a window into the soul of martial arts, because that's what we talk about, you know, the champions and the ones that laid the way and paved that foundation for the rest of us to, you know, get to where we're at, you know, and give us role models and guidance, you know, and being those cornerstones of where to be. So it's an awesome, awesome, you know, honor.
Well, I'm really proud of you, Dean, because, you know, I think back how many years ago it was. I mean, I can't remember when we lost Joe, and Joe let me adopt you. And I'm so proud that you're my student now. And you have the lineage of the great Joe Louis. God bless you, Dean Piles. Now, my second co-host, ladies and gentlemen, he's my military spokesman for the military awards that we give out every year. You know, we've got an incredible group of military people, Danny McCall, Lonnie Walker, Al Hifford, Colonel Ike Slaughter, Colonel C. Vitale, Colonel Phil Torres. I mean, we got some incredible people. This man speaks, is a spokesman for all those men I just mentioned. Hey, Jay, are you there?
I'm here. How are you?
Hey, Animal, how you doing?
Good. How you doing?
Good. How's Cleveland?
Beautiful. It's been nice and warm.
Boring. I was there 30 years ago. And it was boring.
get in, you know, classes and get a good sweat going. It's been great.
Yeah.
It's been a real nice summer.
We got a great show tonight, and I'd like to introduce him right now. okay, when I first started in the museum, a lot of people told me that I couldn't do it. I actually got people emails and letters and phone calls and confrontations. It could be done. There was a couple people, and this is one of them. His name is Brett Mills, who believed in me. And he traveled with my son and I all over the country. And we got to perform. I guess I probably cut more cucumbers on his throat and stomach than a lot of people. But I'm talking about world traveler, black belt, Brett Mills. Are you there, Brett?
Yes, sir, I am. Good evening.
That was a good introduction. Sex in the mail, right?
Hey, gentlemen, how are y'all doing this evening? Thank you for having me.
How are you?
I think I said that was a good introduction. The check is in the mail. I'm just kidding. Well, Rick, let me ask you a question. Now, you trained with the great Larry Ritchie, but you've been influenced by Skipper Mullins, Alan Steen, a host of Texans, George Minshew, Don Mullins, whatever. The bottom line is, what did Texas mean to you as being a black belt?
Well, you know, I always said I wasn't born in Texas, but I got there as fast as I could because that's where the action was.
Well, you've got to travel all around the world. Didn't you live in Russia for a while?
Yes, sir. I lived in Moscow for 2 years, and I lived in Sakhalin Island for 1 year.
Oh, wow. Now, you met some incredible people there, too. You met our friend, what was his name, Mohammed? What was his last name?
Malasa El-Said. My time in Egypt is when him and I had a school.
Oh, yeah, you were in Egypt, too. I forget.
Yeah.
Russia, Egypt. You've been all around the world, man, representing sport karate. Now, you became an ambassador years ago, and you actually became my traveling partner. All those shows I did now. I got to ask you again about karate in general. Now, you live in Louisiana. Now, do you teach in Louisiana now?
Not anymore. I still do, not as far as school goes, I still do private lessons for people who want to learn the Texas way of fighting.
Cool. Well, the other thing I love about you, you turned into a fisherman. As you know, in my career, and you were with me, I was a professional bass fisherman for, 20 years? And you got your own boat and everything now, right?
Yes, sir.
What's the biggest bass you caught so far?
So far, 6.5 pounds.
That's a good fish, buddy. Was it
during a tournament or just for fun?
Was it during a tournament or for fun? Cool.
Just for fun. When I grow up, I want to be just like Grandmaster Perry, catching the big fish.
There you go. Exactly. Well,
do some walleye fishing
this year for the power of women. You and Ricky Butler are going to be running the museum display, and I really want to thank you for that. But, you know, you're with me in the beginning, and I just want people to kind of understand. I was a fanatic, but you put up with me, Breck. You did. Yeah. Did you think I was crazy, or did you think I had a vision?
No, sir. There was no thinking involved. I knew you were crazy, but I knew we could make it happen.
Okay. Well, now that it's been 30 years and you've been a part of it from the beginning, are you happy with what I've done? And, have I met your expectations?
Professor, you've actually exceeded anything that I thought it would ever become.
Wow, thank you.
That was with the help and dedication of a lot more people than just me.
Well, let's talk about a couple of those people. Skipper Mullins, I know you were friends with him. What did you think about Skipper?
I don't think there was any better. Skipper was an excellent fighter. He was a gentleman. He did great service to the great state of Texas as a fireman for many years when he retired. He was a Marine. They don't come any better.
Yeah. How about Mr. Steen? What do you think about Mr. Steen?
one of a kind, excellent martial artist. He was the father of Texas Taekwondo. And the only, I guess, regret I have is I was never able to beat him in a game of golf.
Okay, I got to throw another one at you. George Minshew, my mentor, my friend, my best friend, and the man that's been with me from the beginning. What about George Minshew?
George was probably the father of karate promotions and business in, I know, in the state of Texas, but possibly in the United States. He was a go-getter when it came to promoting our sport and running the businesses like he did.
He's the guest speaker this year at the Power of Women. It's so cool. He might even do Suzuki One. You remember Suzuki One when he pretended
yep.
to get on a motorcycle and start it, and it was a kata he presented in front of all the black belts. That's so
yep.
funny. Yeah. Okay, I got one more for you. Do you remember when we went to Dallas together and we went to Jamie Cashin's house? We played poker and we went to Mr. Burleson's surprise birthday party. Remember that?
Yes, sir.
Sure
that
was
do.
A long time ago. Yeah, we had a fun time, didn't we?
We had a ball.
It was. And I introduced you to Jamie Cashin. He was the character in me. I love him.
Oh. Yes, sir. I love him to death. He's one of a kind.
Yeah, he is. You also met Billy Sweeney. Billy Sweeney is
correct.
The illustrator, and he's a medic, ex-medic from the NBL. But you met a lot of people that weekend, I remember. We had a good time.
We did.
You know,
Billy's a great guy.
One more thing. What
Billy,
are you doing
Billy's
now?
Also
I know
another.
You do you do cars or you show cars now, don't you? What do you do exactly?
We built a 1969 Chevelle Super Sport that we take around to different shows around the states and show it.
Cool. Have you won awards?
Yes, sir, I do. I just had to last summer add on to my trophy shelf in my shop another 10-foot of shelf for the trophies.
Wow, cool. Well,
Gary, I had a question.
What, AJ?
Gary.
Yeah.
What was your most influential, I should say, the greatest memory that influenced you in your martial art training?
You're asking Brett. Go ahead, Brett. Go
yeah.
ahead and answer the question.
Well, he's our guest, isn't he, Gary?
Well, go ahead, Brett. Answer the question. AJ's like
biggest,
that, Brett. He interrupts everything. But go ahead and answer the question. What was your
the biggest influence? The biggest influence I had was when we moved to Katy, Texas. I was blessed to actually buy a house two doors down from Don Mullins, and
cool.
Don, being Skipper's little brother, was in the martial arts scene with all the legends, and Don's actually the one who introduced me to Gary Lee and then to Skipper and to Alan Steen and to George Minshew, and we went from there. So being accepted as part of that, I guess, elite group of martial artists back then was probably my biggest influence and just made me strive more to be better and to be the best I could possibly be.
You know what, Breck? I don't know if I told you this or not, but Don Mullins used to come to my first fight club when he was with Blackwood Academy and Richie. And I would talk Don Mullins and Jeff McRae, you know, Blackwood Academy diehards, to go with me to different schools, as you knew, and I would just show up on their Blackwood classes. And Don Mullins would just beat the crap out of these people, man. It was incredible. It was good. He had a gift. He had his gift like his brother did. They were kickers. You know, I got to tell you a story about Don, too. We was fighting in a tournament in Houston, and this guy was talking about him, you know, the brown belt division, because that was when Don was the brown belt. And he goes, he ain't crap, whatever. And I said, I tell you what, buddy, I got a $100 bill that says this guy's going to beat the best guy in less than a minute. Pulled Don over to the side. I said, Don, I got $100. You're going to beat this guy in less than a minute, and I'll take you out to eat. Well, Dom beat him in about 30 seconds. It was so cool. And I won $100 and we went to eat at Hooters. You know, cool stuff, cool stories, man.
Well, they were definitely kickers. I mean, I remember a party that Don and I went to in Houston, and you were there. It was when Jet Li's instructor came to the States to Houston.
Yeah,
he was on his way to Austin to do some seminars. And Don, we all had suits on at this party, and Don actually kicked a chandelier off of the ceiling wearing a suit.
Well, you know what Skipper did one time? He kicked the bottom of a basketball net 10 feet straight up. That's a true story. I heard that. And, you know,
they were blessed.
Fred Redd. Fred Redd told me that. Fred Warren Redd said that Skipper Mullins kicked straight up and kicked the basketball goal. That's pretty damn impressive, you know?
Yeah.
So, anyway, thank you so much for, you know, being on the air with me and I, Greg, and just sharing with me and talking. And don't go anywhere, because as soon as I do my segments, I'm going to bring you back and I'm going to hit you with some names that maybe you might not know them, but it's called the Legends Name Game. This is where I say name to you, and you can say yay or nay about them. You got 2 minutes, and then we just hit you with as many names as we can. So don't go nowhere, okay?
Okay, Gary. Thank you. Thank
God
you,
bless you, Brett. God bless you, buddy. Thank
God
you for
y'all.
Everything you've done for the museum. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Mr. Brett Mills, an amazing Texas, well, now Louisiana black belt. But, you know, he trained with some incredible people, and he's actually a black belt underneath the museum in my lineage. So I'm so proud of him. But, you know, we'll bring him back in a few minutes. But right now, we're excited because we've got a couple segments that people love. And this first one has been put together because I believe that people have an opinion. And I put together a group of people that have opinions. And did Dee get on the line yet, Dee Chambers? How about John Williams? I'm going to introduce the lady of the group. And I, you know, she's an ex-PKL champion. She's a Goju trainer, a Shoryu trainer. She trains in Qigong and Tai Chi. Well, she's an all-around lady, like a Renaissance lady. I'm talking about the only one and only Karen Slatter. Hey, Karen, are you there?
Yes, I am.
What are you laughing at?
A Renaissance lady. I love it.
Every week I introduce you differently, don't I?
Yeah. Today you
well,
said, are you 78 or 79?
Well, get used to it. I got a lot of introductions for you. But tonight we're going to be talking about coaching. Now, I know that's an interesting subject. So the bottom line is this, young lady, I want to talk about basically picking the right coach and why it's important if you do pick the right coach on the national level. Now, as you know, I got coached my career by a lot of incredible people. George Minshew, Eric Schumann, Pops Cranston, just name a few. Sam Chapman. But I was very lucky. And that was the only reason why I even got to do what I did, because I had great coaches. How do you feel about it, Karen?
Oh, I think it's important to have somebody in your corner that you can trust and also understands the other fighters, who has taken the time to watch the other opponents, people that I'm going to fight down the line, and learn their weaknesses too, and be able to come back and say to me, now here's what this person does, or here's what I want you to do, set them up. It just takes so much of the stress off the fighter. If you're trained and ready to go, you shouldn't have a whole lot of stress going on. But if your coach comes up and says, this person always drops their left hand, you got it. You're in there. And it's just really nice to have that.
Well, you've been a champion for a long time. Did you have any people that influenced you, your coach, your career?
Oh, yeah. My kickboxing teacher, Shifu, my kickboxing coach, was a world champion, international champion. So he was also a Marine. So he took no excuses, and it was this balls to the wall, constant, get out there, fight, fight, train, train. And it really pushed me. It pushed me really further than I ever would have gone on my own to have somebody with that caliber of training who knows what the end result is. Never let me ever give him an excuse. And it was great.
Right.
It was great.
Well, that's cool. Now, I've got a very special guest that takes the place of a friend of mine who is kind of under the weather. He's going into surgery. I'm talking about Jerry Smith, the co-founder of the Black Karate Federation. So keep him in your prayers. But tonight, who's going to be taking his place and a special guest is Professor Tom Spellman. Now, he's not only the editor of the Sport Karate Museum website, he's a golly bum. He's a veteran of the wars. He's been around a long time. And he teaches presently, but he's also very, 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 well, I will say it, he's very smart. And he's the reason why the webpage of the Sport Karate Museum is looking so good. Tom Spellman, are you there?
Absolutely, Gary. I'm right here.
Hey, how you doing tonight, Tom?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Well, how do you feel about coaching in general?
Well, you know, I sometimes think coaching is confused by some people with, you know, the teacher and the sensei doing the teaching and or coaching with individuals. But, you know, according to the definition, coaching is about a form of development that has to do with an individual who is seeking to.
I think we're losing.
You broke up. Yeah,
the
Tom, you broke up. You're breaking up.
I break up this sometimes. I do my best.
You're out there where all the bad waves are in California, aren't you?
To California by way of being in Southern Oregon. So
you're in Oregon. I'm sorry. I thought you were in California.
No, I'm in Southern Oregon.
Yeah.
Anyway, so...
you're back. Go ahead.
So, you know, the coach is a multi-functional individual that is zoned on a specific idea with this person. And if he's at the ring, that's obviously a very important time when it's really there. But other things are important, too. You know, a coach, especially a national level of competition, things that that coach has to be aware of is other places, other rules, and
Tom, you're breaking up, buddy. Tom? Tom, you're out there in the middle of the wildfires, aren't you? Tom, I lost you, buddy. Yeah, we'll try one more time. Tom, are you there?
Can you hear me better?
No.
Can you hear me
now?
I feel like
bad.
I'm on a radio, a phone commercial. What?
You're breaking up bad, sir. I mean, I guess it's the wildfires. I don't know. Are you out in the middle of nowhere?
No. I don't know why I'm breaking up. Everything was fine a minute ago, and my end hasn't changed at all.
Okay, I'll take the blame, okay? Okay, anyway, that was Tom. Let me go on to another person. Is AJ, how do you feel about coaching? I mean, you're very opinionated about it. How do you feel about AJ?
Well, I'm going to take a different approach. I think it's completely against martial arts philosophy of student-teacher relationship. Martial art is supposed to be stressful when you're in competition. Because, you know, let's say, for example, when you're in a street situation, you're not going to have a coach. You have to be able to make quick decisions and adapt. And coaching doesn't, when you have somebody's like a bird on your shoulder coaching you, you know, that might be okay for sport karate, all right? But that doesn't help a person to think on their feet and react quickly on their own. And I'm a firm believer in martial arts. A person should do that on their own. And I remember my instructor, my original instructor, God rest his soul, he, when they started doing this with the USTU in Taekwondo, he was livid about calling a martial art instructor a coach. He said there'll be nothing but a gym teacher by the time they get done. And it completely changes the stigma of what a martial art master instructor is with a student-teacher relationship.
Well, I appreciate your opinion, and I think it's important. Dean, are you there? Dean Piles?
Yes. Yes, I'm here.
How do you feel about coaching on a, you know, on a national level in competition? How does Dean Piles feel about that?
Okay, well, let me go ahead and tell you. And look, I know you called me today and said that Mike Stone said that I wasn't to be interrupted, so I feel really special that Mike Stone would say that.
Well, that's on the Wolverine, said, not on this. You can be interrupted
I ain't going to be interrupted. You're interrupting me. Okay, so with that being said, you know, I had a guy that was a coach to me, pretty good guy, had a pretty good fight record. His name was Joe Lewis, and this is how I feel about coaching. The right coach can make any competitor rise to the top if they've got a good coach. Now, here's why. The reason why is you don't have to have a coach in your corner all the time, like AJ was saying. That's right. You know, the thing of it is when you're kickboxing and these guys are training you and getting you to do stuff, they're giving you the tools to be able to do it on your own. Now, you know, and like Ms. Flasher said, you need a coach that's going to do the homework. When I train fighters, I train them to fight the fighter that's at hand, that they have an upcoming match against. Then we work skills that they have their own skill set, so people has to be worried about fighting to their skill set. And I want to say this. You know, if you've got a good coach that's coached you right, even when you're out there alone, because I know this straight from Gunny Cummins, taught us, and I knew exactly what to do even though he wasn't there. I could hear his voice. But I've had students. I had two students were unfortunately attacked, and both of them were female girls. They were two twins that only weighed 112 pounds apiece. But they said that in the mix of being attacked, they heard me come to them just clear as a bell and saying, Dana, overhook. Oh, get the overhook on it. Rolling. Bumping, rolling. Everything. She said, it was like you was just right there coaching me. The reason why is because she heard me screaming in her ear, screaming, telling what to do. So sometimes when you get in that stressful situation, that little bird that sits on your shoulder may not be in the corner, but they're in your head. I know as a competitor, I've done a lot of competing, and you've been in my head, and Joe Lewis has been in my head, and you may or may not be at ringside or in the corner. So I think a good coach is very, very important to make a well-rounded
opinion. That's cool, your opinion. Now, did David Chambers get on there yet, or Dr. Williams? They make it? Okay. Hanji Bowen, are you on the air, sir? Because I want your 2 cents. Hanji Bowen?
Hey, sir, I'm here.
Tell me your 2 cents about coaching.
Well, I think, first of all, you have to – you know, you have to understand what is coaching. And, you know, as martial artists, we influence our So it really depends on what area. If you're talking about sport karate, then that instructor that's teaching sport karate should be an expert or have an expertise on how to help their students win. In life, you have a life coach. You know, and I truly believe that martial artists, to be able to have the longevity of their students, need to be also equipped on go take classes and learn how to produce life skills for people. Because, you know, in many cases, you know, we look at self-defense. It's always great that we're teaching our students in sport karate. We're at the ring. We're, you know, we're shouting out commands. They're doing the strategies. But also about when we look at coaching, we look at how do I influence you more than just being in those self-defense situations? How do I influence you, you know, outside the class? How do I impact your life? So I know, you know, for myself, like when I'm a certified life coach, and I, you know, look at, you know, over 500 students that we promoted to black belt in that 38 years, then the longevity of students in my program was never, it was about my ability to teach, but it was also about the ability to motivate. So when we're looking at, you know, the martial arts instructor, but, you know, if I was teaching classes the way I was taught, I probably wouldn't have as many students. But because I brought these other skill sets as a coach, into my classroom, you know, whether it was mindfulness coaching, you know, this is, and I was at Duke University for 27 years. So, you know, we were able to take those coaching things from the classroom and take it to the basketball team. 5 years at Carolina. It was all about martial arts self-defense, of coaching them how to be able to implement martial arts with what they were legally able to do to enhance. So, again, coaching is knowing what you're coaching on, how, what is the impact you want to have, and knowing that you have the skill set to be able to do it. Anybody can tell you something. That doesn't make it right. That doesn't improve your enhancement. But as a coach, if I come to you and I've got this skill set that I know that works, and again, you know, I really truly believe that from sport karate, which in many cases is very limited into our lives, you know, to life success, but I'm all about coaching, having the skill set and proven record that they can help someone overcome a certain element that they want to accomplish.
Exactly. Now, I got to throw my little two cents in. I'm in Mexico City, and I'm with George Minshew. And, you know, I'm fighting, and all of a sudden these guys line up, and they're all wearing yellow uniforms. They're from a style called Lima Llama. And the end guy had, I guess he had 10 stripes on his belt. He was the head guy. And I looked at him, and I got, you know, I mean, I was there to fight. And George Minshew, my coach, pulls me over. He said, okay, Gary, this is NBL rules. Listen to me. Go to the corner, put one foot in, one foot out. I said, George, he said, well, no, the NBL rules allow that. So what you do is when they get close to you, stick them with a front kick and reverse punch. And I went through everybody like a lawnmower and rocket fuel until the last guy. And George called timed out. And there was the guy that had all the stripes on his belt. And George said, listen, what you do, as soon as you bow in, run. Run from him. Kill the 2 minutes. And I said, I'm not going to run from him. He said, just do it. And I did. I ran from this guy for 2 minutes. Then it was sudden death. So we line up. George calls timeout. He calls me over and he says, okay, as soon as they say go, blitz him. And it was for the championship. And I did exactly what I was told, what I was coached to do. And I won the championship. Coaches are great. And, you know, I appreciate everybody's opinion. Now, did David ever get to call in, Auntie, or Dr. Williams? Bad call in? Okay. Okay, well, I'll tell you what. Tom, are you there, buddy? Tom Sullivan?
Yeah, can you hear me better?
Well, you broke up. Can you maybe, I mean, say something to the last part we were talking about, because you broke up as you were talking.
Now?
You're not breaking up as fast. I can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I'm here now. I don't know if it was electronic, whatever it was. But anyway, the thing I was focusing on when I was looking at it and researching, what I was thinking about was the question that you had added on there about the national level competition. And the things that a coach can bring besides all the things that the wonderful things everybody else said was, you know, a broader perspective of places you're going, where you're, what you're doing, and the changes, you know. It's like I looked at the NASCA listings and the SKEETA listings. And there's both of them don't go for groins, but one of them has an option that groins can be a target. And if you're, you know, if you can either dip that or whatever, not knowing which pitch. And your coach, hopefully, is going to be an informed person that's going to catch stuff like that and able to help through some of the minefields of that type of situation as you go outside your normal area besides just the ring itself. A good example of that was over at the Olympics when the fella from Iran was fighting Saudi Arabia.
Don't even get me started on that because he faked that knockout. He was wide open. His eyes were wide open. If he wouldn't knock that goal out.
If you look at the film, I look at it a lot, and the film is that when he throws a round kick, it's on a level horizontal plane. It's not up to the head, not up to the face. But
well, I don't
guy,
care about that. I've been knocked, Tom. I've been knocked out. You know, I've seen stars and had a concussion. My eyes were closed. I didn't have my eyes wide open. I mean, that was, don't even get me started. But anyway, thank you for your opinion. It means so much. And please tell Uncle Jerry Smith our prayers are with him and he gets through the surgery, okay, when you talk to him. And speaking of prayers, big prayers go out to my friend Cynthia Rothrock, too, because she's a little under the weather. So prayers with her. And thank you to Six and for speaking your opinions. Now, moving right along, I got something very special. We've been in working with this event, or this not event, but this project for almost a year now. It's virtual reality, and I have the inventor on the air, and he talks about it. Reggie, are you there, Dr. Lee?
Yes, sir. How are you doing today?
Hey, Dr. Lee.
Good evening.
Tell people about what SetVR is and what they can expect. And how the, well, I'll tell about the museum involved, but go ahead, sir. And the issues
are important. Yeah, the way I look at our SetVR program, self-defense enhancement in virtual reality, it's, I look at it as a simulation program, a platform for you to practice or anyone to practice to maintain and to prove your skills in self-defense through random attacks, to sensitize your body to respond reflexively, to neutralize without hesitation, as many of your speakers had mentioned on the show that about coaching. I just wanted to reiterate what they were saying in regards to be reacting reflexively with the ability to able to neutralize without even thinking is amazing without even thinking about it. So that's what the program is all about, is to train your body and mind to work as a unit, to work against an opponent that will randomly attack you. We were excited about moving the bar upward in SetVR by introducing the History Portal demo to be the backdrop, to be the future development of Professor Gary Lee's vision of having the History Portal in virtual reality. We've updated our program with SetVR, and I'm super excited about what's called the practice mode. In the practice mode, as you know, with training, you designate targets to strike, striking with your hands and feet. We have a program whereby we designate targets on a practice dummy that you can continue to practice on your targets, practice your skills and striking skills, but also to present you with a hologram that will be moving with you so you can practice moving linear, angular, and circular movements. As you know, in self-defense, movement is very, very important. Not being able to stand still, but to move linear, angular, and circular, and to move these movements and to strike while in motion. How cool is that? So you'll be able to practice while you're in motion, your arts in defense and offense while you're in motion. So basically, my partners and myself, my development team is super excited about SetVR, self-defense enhancement training and virtual reality as a platform whereby you can practice your skills in self-defense whenever, wherever you want. The program is compact and portable. You can take it anywhere you travel, and even during a pandemic, you can continue to practice while practicing social distancing. With the Oculus Rift or Oculus Quest headset, you'll be transported to a virtual reality platform whereby a hologram will confront and attack you when you least expect it with random attacks. The goal of SetVR is to have you to be able to neutralize an attack or a threat that is sudden, unpredictable, and random. To place you, to able to practice to improve your skills in evasion through angular, linear, and circular movements to avoid and to place you in an opportunist position of an advantage for neutralization as you practice to improve your skills in timing, speed, and accuracy as you develop muscle memory, as I mentioned before, to develop a reflex response to a threat or stimulus to neutralize without hesitation, just as if I will bring a patient into my office and tap on their knee. It creates a reflex response, or if you place your hand on a hot stove, you remove your hand very quickly as a reflex response. This is a platform whereby you can practice and utilize what you've been taught in your dojos and schools and techniques and forms in a program for application against a random attack to practice anytime, anywhere, when you want. We plan to have future updates in regards to programs like simulation programs whereby you'll be attacked with multiple attackers, you'll be put in a scenario with home invasion or barroom setting or even in a war zone. SetVR will push you maximally to your limits in self-defense. We've updated our program with punching, kicking combination, and with knife attacks. As you know, knife attacks are very dangerous up and close. We plan to have future updates with virtual matches whereby Professor Gary Lee can have a virtual match with Jesse Bowen or with the Wolverine or even AJ Perry in different parts of the country or different parts of the world. You're able to be able to practice against each other in regards to self-defense techniques and also to learn each other in regards to application for self-defense. We've implemented a program of metrics whereby you can record the number of successful punches, number of blocks, number of evasion, whether you're right or left side dominant, and endurance bet in the experience. So you can improve your endurance while practicing your skills in self-defense. You'll be able to learn the importance of creating a diversion when you grasp the attacker's arms or wrists to create a 1 to 3 second pause and natural response to a window of opportunity for neutralization. We've implemented a program of mindfulness, stretching, meditation, exercise, and we present you with your own personal yoga instructor. So please continue to visit our website at setvr.app. That's SETVR.app. We continue to update SetVR in the future to help you to practice to maximize the application of self-defense when you want and where you want. We continue to be proud to endorse Professor Gary Lee and the Sports Karate Museum to be the future platform of his vision of the history portal. Professor Gary, some few words about your vision of the history portal.
Well, from the very beginning, it's all about the history and about what the pioneers did. So what we're going to do, or the vision is, we created a village within SetVR.app. And eventually, those different buildings will house different questions and answers. And for instance, like, what is the difference between Kung Fu and Kung Fu? What is the difference between Taekwondo and Taekwondo? Who is Jean LaBelle? Who is A.J. Perry? Whoever. We're going to educate people. We're going to teach people how to sport karate. And they're going to get smarter. Eventually, they'll work out themselves into a forest. And there'll be the waterfalls and the tigers and the cranes and whatever. But the hologram will appear, and you have to kick its butt. And you do. And then after you do, a wisdom warrior will appear, and you'll say, okay, Karen Slatcher, are you educated? And Karen will go, of course I am. I answered all the questions and answers. And the wisdom warrior will go, I'm sorry, Karen, you have to go back. And Karen will have to go back, and she has to get smarter. She'll learn more and more and more about sport karate and eventually work her way back out into the forest. This time the hologram will be a samurai with a katana, a wakizashi, a tanto. And he'll have to defeat it with your choice of Okinawa weapons. So you're teaching the difference between Okinawa weapons and Japanese weapons. And Karen beats up that samurai. She defeats it. The wizard warrior appears again. And he says, okay, Karen, are you educated? She is. He takes her hand, leads her to a golden gate. The gate opens up, and there are the portals. Now, for the listeners who don't understand what portals are, these are electronic, computer visionary, where you walk in and see everything there is to see. For instance, if I was going to sell you a house, I would show you the bathroom. Wait a minute. The bathroom, the kitchen, the garage, and you'll see the portal. Well, the portals in the History General Museum will be all the history of everybody. Now, we're going to start with the core group, Mr. Steen, Mr. Stone, Mr. Burleson, Mr. McCarthy, whoever. And then every month we're going to add a new history journal or however long it takes. So you're going to learn about sport karate, the history. You're going to have fun. You're going to be working it out, building a sweat, and it's going to be progressive. Go ahead, AJ. You got a question?
Yeah, I do. You know, when Dr. Lee, when you said neutralize without hesitation, that sounds like
correct.
Something off a James Bond movie.
Bond,
you know,
okay.
I worked with that said VR, and, you know, everything else set aside, it's a lot of fun. It really is. It's something you don't want to take off. You just want to keep doing, and it's a great workout.
Well, it's progressive, and there's a lot of cool things we're adding to it, and it's going to get better. So thank you, Dr. Lee, for being on
thank
the air.
You, sir.
And we're excited about you and some of the inventors, Rick Shanahan and the developers, are coming to Houston October 1st and 2nd at the Power of Women and doing demonstrations and bringing the Oscars Quest. I'm excited about that. So God bless you, Reggie. And how's the things in the hospital? Stay
everything
safe?
Is, we're trying to keep the fort down. Things are moving. So,
well,
yeah.
Cool.
Safety
well,
is
thank you
forward.
So much. Now, one of my favorite segments, and I'm telling not just because he's my student, but he has an alias. It's called the Wolverine. And we kind of let him go crazy. Says what he means what he says, and he can back it up. So, Wolverine, are you there, buddy?
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Now, I'm going to let you go crazy a little bit about national competition and what it takes to become a national competitor by being coached by some great coaches like Joe Lewis. I mean, come on, man. You didn't win 44 world championships by accident. You know, you had some great coaches, and I want your input from as a Wolverine, what it takes to be on a national or world level. Go ahead.
Well, you know, I look at you know, even a regional competition, you have to have the same mindset as you would in a small tournament as you would in a big tournament. You want to make sure that you have that winner's edge, that winner's mindset. And as you've often told me, and that I make sure before I enter the ring, you make sure you own that ring, and you let everybody there know that they own the ring. And you know, you give me a page out of your book. You know, Joe Lewis, you know, coached me. I was an aggressive person already, so it worked out great because he was an aggressive person. So that worked out good with him just pushing my aggression and him telling me, you don't stop till the ref pulls you back. Because you stop, that guy can, you know, regain his composure, whatever, come back and lay you out. So I always had that animal instinct of, you know, finish that opponent off, as you will in the Marine Corps, finish that kill. But in sport karate competition, you know, you would tell me, announce that I'm there to let everybody know. So as I would enter the arena in which I would compete, I would stop at the edge of the doorway, such as at the Battle of Atlanta, and I would yell, oof, and, you know, bow real deep and say, what the heck going on, which is, you know, life and death and out of the haka. And, you know, everybody would stop and look, and then I would walk to the ring, I would do it again, and then when we would line up and bow, I would say that as the judges bowed us in. What the heck going on? So I'd let those people know I come to win. And, you know, I come to compete that day. And you have to have that mindset in each thing. And, you know, whether it be a world event, a huge event, or it be a small tournament. Because, hey, there's great players that show up at these national and regional and just local tournaments. You got some of the best people in the world there. You know, I learned early on that all the best don't just go to the world championship. You might go to some little incident town to some local tournament, and there's a guy there that just don't have the money to get out of town, but yet he's really good. So you always have to bring that A game. And people like yourself, Professor Gary Lee, Joe Lewis, and our sensei Earwood, you know, you set the tone and set the bar for me so that when I went up, I always heard you guys in my head. You know, Grandmaster Lewis has been gone, but when I go to compete and you've got to come and was fortunate enough to be at ringside some, I, you know, it was a great honor for me to at ringside have Corley, Jeff Smith, Bill Wallace, and you there cheering me on, doing, you know, demonstrating something and doing my routine in honor of Joe Louis and competing in honor of Joe Louis. And, you know, I've said this 1,000 times, when I go up and intro the judges, I don't just give them my name. I tell them that I trained under Joe Louis, Professor Gary Lee, and O-Sensei Dewey Earwood. And I let people know that I did that, and I let people know why I'm there to compete. And when I go to compete, I'm not just competing for me, but I'm competing for what you guys instilled in me. And I want to show the people that I'm competing against, as well as the crowd, I was trained by the best, and this is why I can do what I'm doing, and this is what it looks like when you're trained by the best and you have the right mindset. And, of course, always, you know, giving glory to God, and, you know, we've always talked about that, the prayers, vitamins, and training with the PVT that's on the back of my gi and on the side of my leg. And, you know, we do that, and a lot of people don't understand, but it's that mindset. And I think, you know, at the Battle of Atlanta, when I turned to you, before I went to the judges and I held my bow up above my head and then bowed down to you and said us to let them know that we were there. And I even said, come and take it, that even when I went to the judges and then come back and took that extra time to do it again, it let every competitor there and the judges there know I wasn't just there for me. I was there for the art, the sport, and for my instructors. And that's what good coaches instill in players, and that's how lineage gets passed down and stories get told, and that's how legends are made. Nobody remembers your name if you're not willing to get out there and do it, you know? And that's what y'all get.
Good job, Wolverine. That was really good. I hope people understand that, because all local competition is hard. But if you have a great coach, the ability to have someone to see your assets or your ability to make yourself better, then it's going to make you a better competitor. Now, you know, I appreciate the Wolverine, and the Wolverine is very opinionated, but tonight's topic, not only with the six and having special speakers like Jesse Bowen and Tom Spellman put their two cents in, it's very important that we speak about the fact that great coaches come in all sports, and we all have our different opinions, but I really believe that there's always someone better than you watching you. And I'll say this. There was a great man who's gone now. His name was Mako Nishida, and he was my sword instructor for, golly bum, 22 years. He was known as a Japanese actor in Hollywood, but he was a great swordman too. But he would call me, and he would always tell me, there's always one person in the crowd that knows what they're doing and that can coach you to be better. Well, I never really met anybody like that. They really come up to me and come out of a crowd or all the shows I did. But I always thought that there was one person out there that could tell me to make it better and could coach me better. So that's why I was always on the edge to do what I did. But I believe in great coaching, so I appreciate everybody's opinion. I appreciate the Wolverine, but I want to get back to my special guest. Breck, are you there?
Yes, sir.
We got a couple minutes. I'm going to hit you with a couple names, and I want you to tell me what you think about them. You got 2 minutes. You ready? Norris.
Chuck Norris. Actually, my first hero is another reason I got into martial arts when I started. I wanted to be like him. He had actually come to our school, All South Karate, in Algiers, a suburb of New Orleans, when I was training under Master Makami. And he was at that time, being a kid, he was a large influence and just wanted to, it made me want to keep going and not give up. I wanted to be like him.
Well, you had the pleasure of going to Arnold Schwarzenegger's event, and we did a demonstration, and you got to see the great Jim Harrison beat up his son, Tor, in front of everybody, Wesley Snipes and everybody. What do you think about Jim Harrison?
He was a true gentleman, but a true killer. He, if I'm not mistaken, Bruce Lee had made the comment that that would be the last person in the world that he would ever want to come up across in a dark alley.
He called him the most dangerous man around.
Yeah.
And that came from Bruce Lee. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Now, I'm with you as somebody that you watched grow up, and he's turned out to be an amazing martial artist. But you watched him grow up. What do you think about Garrett Lee?
Well, besides the fact that the fruit never falls very far from the tree, I think he's actually beat all of your expectations, because he dang sure beat all of mine. He's an animal.
Yes, he is. Well,
and
you know,
he's serious about the art.
Well, yes, he is. He's still teaching. You know, he runs a school in Attawak, Texas, and he finished second in the world in NASCAR competition in Japanese kata. So I'm real proud of him. But I want to say thank you. Thank you for being on the air tonight and sharing. And remember, you know, the most important thing is get the fish to the boat, okay? Don't let it click off. It's a little joke. Well, God bless you, Brett, and I hope you win many more awards with your car. What's next for you? You'll be coming to the October to the Power of Women and run the museum, but do you have a car show coming up or anything?
The next one will be in around the middle of September, and then cruising the coast in Biloxi, Mississippi in October.
Cool. Now, if anybody wanted private lessons in their Louisiana, how would they get in touch with you?
They could contact me on two different numbers. One of them is 318-553-7296. The other number is my Houston cell, area code 281-760-8404.
Well, thank you so much. And don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, the Power of Women in Houston, Texas, at the West Chase Marriott, a 5-star hotel in Houston, Texas, that will be hosting the Power of Women. And for more information, you can just call 713-483-0476. And we hope to see you in Houston, Texas in October. See the debut of The Ring, debut of the magazine for the Spokane Museum, debut of the History General book, their promotion of Darlene McPherson and Matthew Black Belt, honoring Chris Minshew and Jenny Pless, and all the incredible women that have been beside, not behind, but beside the men to make them what they are. As we always say every week, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to our show. And we really care about you. Thank you so much. Mahalo. Aloha. Good night, everybody.
Mahalo. Bye.
Mahalo. Good night, everybody. God bless America.